Welcome to Volterra Podcast number 13. We're back after a several-week hiatus. Louie and I were just talking. We're not sure exactly how long it was or what was going on the last time we spoke, but it was several weeks ago. So how are we doing today, Louie?
Yeah, we're doing okay. Number 13. That's yeah, unlucky for some, but hopefully not us.
It's my lucky number. It's the number that I always picked when I was playing soccer when I was little and basketball. It was my number. So 13. I like 13. So yeah, what have you been up to over the past? We don't know how many weeks. X number of weeks.
Well, things moving in the same sort of speed that they usually do in Britain, which is not particularly fast. At present, I am working on a sort of small project to start a magazine, an internet magazine, possibly to be available for download, focusing on, I think the term people use is dirty realism, but I think that's just one of these wishy-washy literary terms. It doesn't actually mean anything, so I'm not really that inclined to use it. But the kind of like borderline smut that I usually write, I was trying to create a central database for that, I think is a good way of putting it. And
also picking out the shit.
I mean, ironically, with like writing that focuses in many cases on physical shit, like there is a lot of
correct. But then picking out the stuff of that shit that is good shit and filtering out the nonsense. You had some pretty lofty names that you were putting in. You had Orwell, Hamilton. Can you go through those?
I went for a sort of cross section of writers that I think were pretty good, and I thought anyone sort of Orwell, yeah, Patrick Hamilton, Bukowski, John Fante, and I forget who else was in there. There was one other. It will come to me. But that's sort of the sort of gritty, well written, but writing a lot about low life or real human experience, away from the kind of hoity-toity literary circles, anyway.
Well, anybody that's read your writing on Volterra certainly understands where your style, I think, is the best way to put it.
Absolutely.
Your unique angle of your unique perspective. And I don't think it's actually as unique, but it's also, I don't know, it's a style that is budding, I think.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be, well, as some stuff is filtering through, there is clearly a community out there. It's just a question of whether their writing is any good. I don't profess to say that my writing is particularly like the sort of be all and end all of it all, but some people's is like a lot worse. That I can say
I've been neck deep in a different kind of real life shit. The political sphere.
A political quagmire.
Yeah. And the shit truly hit the fan on Tuesday night. Not only did my candidate lose by a significant margin, but Democratic candidates across the country lost by even more significant margins. And it was the term that was being used quite widely was bloodbath.
Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Why?
There were ties to the Red Wedding. I don't know. Are you a Game of Thrones guy?
Game of Thrones, sort of. Yeah, they sort of knock off like quite a lot of the major players, like straight off the bat. Right. I've vaguely followed this through mainly social media, due to the volume of American friends I have. And I actually confess, I don't really understand the American voting system at all, because this vote was, it's like a midterm. So it's in between two, you call them general elections? No, you call them presidential elections.
Correct. So this is a general election.
Okay.
I'm not sure the, I guess every odd or every even year is a general election year. So basically how it works is every 2 years, I guess that's what calls it. That's what makes it a general election. Every 2 years, the House, the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election.
Yep.
So like there's that. And every senator's term in the U.S. Senate is 6 years. So every 2 years, one third of the U.S. Senate comes up for re-election.
Got you. Okay.
So this midterm was one third of the Senate and the entire House of Representatives, but no presidential. And it also was like state houses across the country and a certain number of governors as well. It was probably the lowest of the, at least in Connecticut, because there weren't any Senate races in Connecticut. It was like the most off of the off years, I guess you could say.
Okay.
We didn't have a governor's race that was close. And our governor won. So the Democratic governor won in Connecticut. He was one of the few Democratic bright spots in the country.
So what has happened basically, as far as there's been we'd call it a Republican sort of landslide. Is this correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
Across the entirety of America. I don't really understand, again, like obviously, like I barely fathom British politics, so other countries, short of kind of maybe South Pacific Islands where they, I don't know, have some sort of strange drum initiation, which is that takes care of everything. I don't really understand. How do you get the House of Representatives and the Senate are different things?
Yeah.
They're like two chambers. Got it.
It's like the House of Lords and the House of...
House of Commons, yeah.
But the House of Lords with actually like people who are elected and not given to it by birth.
Yeah, it wouldn't just be like pointless nepotism and people that are nearly dead. I get you. And then Congress.
There are a lot of people that are nearly dead and there is a lot of nepotism, but it's also electorally based, not just...
It's democratically based nepotism rather than having a big house in the countryside nepotism.
Correct.
Their big house in the countryside is irrelevant to their position.
Correct.
Okay, good way. But you've...
It's symptomatic, not caused, but yes.
It figures. I get confused on two. There's a Congress as well. Is this correct as well?
That is the entirety of those. That's both houses. So Congress is representatives plus Senate equals House of Representatives, or equals Congress. Excuse me.
Congress. Okay, so basically, bills have to go through both, and then you can make stuff law.
And then it's signed by the president. So what happened was Republicans took control of both houses of Congress. They already had control of House of Representatives. They took control of the Senate by a not insignificant margin, but not enough to override a veto. So you need two-thirds of the Senate. No, you don't need two-thirds. You need 60 votes in the Senate to override a veto from the president. So what that means is, despite the fact that they have control of both houses of Congress, they still need to work with the president in order to pass law. Now, a lot of their goals are completely antithetical anathema to President Obama's agenda, so to speak. So they want to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They want to roll back regulations on the EPA, so that's Environmental Protection
Agency.
They want to do immigration reform, which actually might be able to do that, but it seems like they're going to have to. It seems like there's gridlock is the term that's been used to death over the past 6 years or so. And it looks like gridlock's going to stay. There might be a couple more government shutdowns because Obama is not going to want to like undermine his legacy and kind of cater or fold to pressures from this from this Congress.
Okay. Interesting. So basically, does that mean, so is the next, when's your next presidential
happen? 2016.
That's 2016. Okay. So does that mean that the groundwork is going to be very difficult for a Democratic Party candidate to win, or is it completely irrelevant?
It's almost nearly irrelevant because the people that vote in midterms, or the people that vote in presidential elections, don't vote in midterms. So our turnout this year was, in Connecticut at least, was about 53%, between 53 and 55%.
That's like, it's better than Britain, but still pretty shit.
Yeah. But in presidential elections, it's like almost 80. It's like,
okay, that's good. Yeah.
So, and nearly the entirety of those 30% are Democratic voters. So, yeah. The Democratic base just didn't turn out for this election, okay. Which is symptomatic of a lot of things, but is a frequent occurrence in midterm elections.
So disappointing, but not crippling.
I mean, crippling in that it is a really big blow at the moment for the next 2 years. But the other thing that, like, the media doesn't like to really bring up, because it doesn't really play well now, and it is more contextualizing than headline producing, is that in 2 years, like, so this year, all of our weakest, so the senators that lost this year, were a lot of senators that had come in or that had won in 2008. So that was 6 years ago. That's the end of their first term. 6 years ago, 2008, which was the tide of Barack Obama that won so many Democratic seats. And now, like, that kind of, like, honeymoon is over, so to speak.
Yeah.
So all of our weakest places, all the places that we probably shouldn't have won in 2008, were up for election.
Mm.
And then in 2016 and 2018, all the Republican weak spots are up. So while this is a pretty temporary, 2 year temporary kind of reality. And on top of that, this is the other point that I wanted to make. So while Democrats, like, lost across the board, Democratic policies passed across the board. So there are a bunch of Democratic, like, endorsed policies, raise of the minimum wage passed in four really, really conservative states. So, it passed in, like, Arkansas, South Dakota, Nebraska, I think, and Alaska, which minimum wage is, like, antithetical to the Republican, like, ethos, I guess. And marijuana legalization passed in Oregon and Washington, D.C.
Christ.
And gun universal background checks for gun purchases passed in Washington State, which is huge as well. One of the biggest ones. So,
okay, yeah.
Despite the fact that Democrats lost in a lot of ways, like, their policies passed, which is, I think, an indictment on Democratic politicians who ran away from, like, progressive politics and liberal politics and said, no, we want to cater to, like, the center rather than catering to their base.
Oh, okay. But no, figures. I would be lying if I said it was not a confusing process, but it's the same everywhere, I imagine.
Politics.
It's a game that very few people really understand, myself included. But I take it it's been pretty hectic for you the last few weeks. There's been a lot of what? Kind of canvassing? Kissing babies?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so I haven't done – like, we did a good amount of canvassing, but we had mainly volunteers do that. Like, I did some over the weekend, over this past weekend. We called it GOTV, Get Out the Vote weekend, where there was a lot – big effort to canvass and – make phone calls and shit like that. I did some of it. I was more directing things. But yeah, like, I was working, like, for the past 2 weeks, I've been working, like, not going to exaggerate, but like 12 to 15 hour days. And just not, like, on the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, I would, like, get up, do a bunch of emails and shit and wait for that stuff to go through. So I wouldn't have to do anything between, like, 10 and noon And then afternoon, I would have to do a bunch of shit. And then in the evening, I had to do a bunch of stuff as well. Like, I had to go to events and that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like 12 hours straight, but or 12, 15 hours straight, but it was like you're on for that amount of time.
Still gotta be burning the candle the whole way.
Yeah, you know? Burning the candle at both ends, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, that's Well, I can only admire your efforts, really, and I'm sorry that it didn't work out for the Democratic Party in America.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just me. It wasn't just us. And that was the thing that we decided at the end was, or that we, my candidate and I were talking about. It's like, if it was close, it would have been worse because it would have been something like we had done on the campaign that would have made the difference. But this clearly had nothing to do with anything we did in the campaign. Like this was going to happen from the start.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's, it's an interesting quandary. 2016, though, presidential elections. I think they have it's next year. They have a general election here next year, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Really?
Mm.
And who's gonna, is Labor is gonna be okay next year? Or is it still gonna be a concern?
I imagine so. Actually, yeah, in the last few weeks, obviously you probably haven't, or had any desire to follow British politics at all, who would? The Labour Party is kind of imploding at the moment, like quite badly. There's been questions over his leadership. This is Miliband.
Right.
And the head of the Scottish Labour Party walked out, which on the face of it doesn't seem like a big thing, but because Scotland is like quite a staunch Labour stronghold, it's worrying. Like I just don't see where they're going to get the votes from to even get close to challenging the Conservative Party, who, yeah, I imagine will probably just about pull it on. The worrying thing is mainly the UKIP, I think, are actually going to win like quite a lot of seats at this one. Not even joking. They now have one seat, which is incredible when you actually they have representation in Parliament now, because a lot of some Conservative MPs are defecting to them, like they think it's like the way forward. So we have that coming up, and then we are going to try and vote ourselves out of Europe after that. So that's how things are panning out here.
Is that 2016?
I think 2016. The Conservatives have promised there or. How it works if they do not get it. Though I think the Labour Party is on board as well. There will be a referendum to leave the EU. And they've got the go-ahead from Merkel. So this is a very...
It's been christened by the German Chancellor. Always, yeah. Always a difficult... Yeah.
So that could happen. That's good, which would be pretty tragic, I think. But
So what's your like take on politics in general? Like I know you're somewhat not interested in it, but you're intrigued by it because of you covered the Scottish referendum, and like that kind of politics is really like it's interesting to see how that affects, like, that's a direct effect on people's lives. But like, how do you countenance politics in general? Like, what's your philosophy, or what's your view of politicians and politics in general?
I stand by a lot of the time. I really don't give a fuck a lot of the time, which is a fairly apathetic state to be in. Of late, the thing I really can't stand about politics is the people themselves. I hate the idea that there's something that is a career politician. I don't understand how anyone can even consider themselves to be part of the democratic process where they have literally no clue, no affinity with the people they represent, it happens a lot in, well, I mean, I only really can use British politics as an example, but it just seems you can stick to like a formula that has been taught and you can win elections without really doing anything at all. The one thing I really got behind in the Scottish referendum was that the Scottish National Party not only cared about, like, and you could say they cared about the people's interests of Scotland, Scottish people's interests. But not just that, they just had a few characters that sort of transcended this ridiculous stereotype of politicians that we have. I mean, it's ridiculous that this country at the moment, Britain, is ruled by a group of sort of university mates that went to the same school. There's nepotism, and then there's another sort of strain to it. But these people don't have a clue. They just have enough. I say they don't have a clue. I'm sure you know they're. But compared, just a representation of the people, they might as well be Martians to me.
Right. So they not only went to the same universities, they went to the same schools. But that's been the status quo for literally the entirety, since this 15th century, 16th century. Like, that's how Britain has been run.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't really be surprised. There's not, that's the way of things. And it's hard. It's almost impossible to represent this amount of people, keep everyone happy. This is why I think American politics, it must just be a complete minefield. It's you couldn't possibly, just the surface area and the sheer volume of people is way, way too much to effectively, do anything.
Right.
I mean, obviously, things can be changed, but you're just never going to get everyone on board. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And it's bad here as well. I feel they may have, there is no kind of correlation between real life and politics in Britain. That's why I just don't really care very much about it.
Yeah. Do you subscribe to the Russell Brand theory of politics? Have you heard that?
I've seen a few. I haven't read the book, and I haven't read the myriad of Guardian articles that have sort of propagated his claim. I couldn't really say. I definitely don't think Russell Brand is the answer to everyone's problems.
I mean. He's at one end of the spectrum. That's, I think they were playing a quote of his on the radio on NPR recently, and it was basically what are you saying? He's like until there's no actual difference between politicians. There's no real difference between any politicians now. They're just talking about the same things in slightly different ways. And until there's actually a choice, there's no choice is what is his point.
Yeah.
There's no choice. There's actually a choice. Why bother? Why participate in the process? And I see where he's coming from, but I also I just don't agree with him in that change doesn't happen in one massive, unless it's a revolution, which is kind of what he's like.
He's probably, he's up for that too, but yeah.
But that's just such a drastic way to change things. There's a lot, there's the democratic process can change things, granted at a snail's pace, but I mean.
You got to put your faith in it.
That's why I enjoy doing it. I genuinely enjoy campaigning. I like the competition. I like the kind of hours. I like all that kind of stuff. I think it's fun. A lot of people on the volunteers are amazing, amazing people. But it is super frustrating when you see nothing happening for decades and decades and decades. And at this point, there's going to have to be massive wholesale changes for a lot of the problems to be fixed. Especially in American politics. I mean, I can't speak to British politics that closely, but
I think you're not a million miles away from the mark anyway. It's I'd say very similar here. But yeah, you're right. There's no quick fixes, and I think Mr. Brand is very much a proponent of the quick fix. And yeah, we'll have a revolution and kick them all out. I think it's a bit sad that Russell Brand. Has become this cult figure of the revolutionary zeal and of change. That's him here. there's room for actual politicians to sort of not step into his shoes, God forbid, but, you know, do a similar thing and just engage with
like, people. Or like boots, like high leather boots that have heels on them, because that's the kind of shoe that Russell wears.
Exactly.
But here's a question. Like there are good politicians in Connecticut. Both our senators are really good people. Like, I've met both of them. They're really, really nice, good people. Like, our governor's kind of a dick, but he's actually like a good leader, good policies, good kind of, but he's a dick. Like, he's not a nice guy.
Yeah.
Not a nice guy. But he, like, that was the end of his campaign, was, look, like, I know I'm kind of an asshole. He's like, look, you may not like me, but like, look at all the stuff that we've done to like over the past 4 years. And it worked. I mean, he won by a larger margin than anyone in 2010. But I feel like there are those kind of politicians in Britain. I saw one guy from Tottenham, of all places, and we'll get to football in a second, but Tottenham MP, he was saying how, football clubs pay their players like £300,000 a week, but can't pay their like janitors and groundskeepers more than like $9.50 an hour or something like that. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see it. I don't think they're even getting not even $9.50 an hour, but that's not a bad wage. I didn't read into the story though, but I was aware of this guy. In fact, there's a big demand at the moment for people to have dropped what's called the living wage here.
Yeah.
And actually Hearts FC became the first football club in Britain to adopt the living wage and pay, which is, yeah, solidarity forever. Top of the league, and actually paying the ground staff money that they can live on, and you know, not have to sort of scrimp and save and hang about in terrible parts of Tottenham at ridiculous hours.
That's a big shout here as well. I mean, Connecticut was the first state to, and this is one of the things this governor ran on, was Connecticut was one of the first states. It was the first state to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Now that won't kick in until 2017 because the business community made a big fuss about, I don't know, how it would hurt jobs or some bullshit like that.
Paying people,
But whenever I hear pro-business politics or like you want to be pro-business, I just think of like 1938, like Franco in Spain. That's immediately what my mind clicks to. It's like pro-business. Yeah, you're a fascist. Absolute fascist. Anyway,
just watching the Condor Legion reducing Guernica to ashes. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we need to spark our economy by empowering the people that already have all the money and power. Mm. Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, if you're gonna pass the Rorschach test on it, yeah,
yeah. So here's a segue. We spoke about Tottenham. We spoke about Russell Brand, who's a big West Ham fan. West Ham have been this is a segue to football officially. West Ham have been playing well, have they not?
Yeah, I mean, you speak about revolution over here in Britain.
The Allardyce Revolution?
I think it was before the Allardyce Revolution, there was a revolution like against Allardyce where the fans were giving like an open forum at the start of the year. Informing him, they were like, look, we're tired of the way you play football. Allardyce, Sam Allardyce, for our non-footballing listeners, is a man who plays he's a manager of a football team who will pretty much, I would say, guarantee you survival in the Premiership. However, the style of football he plays is incredibly boring to watch, and people that are paying a lot of money to go see a team week in, week out, don't want to see it that well. It's kind of in recent times that he became this, but he was faced with this prospect at the start of the season, and he agreed that like he'd lose his job if he didn't kind of turn things around. I think West Ham are trying to, they're trying to really become a big club. They've got a new stadium. Well, they're going to move into it next year, potentially.
So they'll fill it like two times a year, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But they've got aspirations of kind of being this big entity. And yeah, they've providing it doesn't, like, no more of it burns down, they'll be moving into the Olympic Stadium next year. Yeah, a bit of it burnt down. But I think it wasn't like too bad.
And it was on purpose so that they could actually fill it when in a couple of years. Yeah,
they can just put some tape around it for a while and maybe it'll be fine. But they are playing pretty incredible football. I think they're third in the Premiership at the moment, and they beat Man City a couple of weeks ago, which is astounding. He basically has found he's a Senegalese guy called Diafra Sakho, who has now broken the West Ham goal scoring. He's scored in every game he's played in, which is pretty good for Premier League. I guess it would be like, I don't know, hitting a lot of home runs every time you play baseball or something. But he's doing very well. He got injured when last week they didn't win because nobody scored. But not enough people scored anyway. But they're doing exceptionally well. He got rid of a bunch of guys, and he seems to have the ones he didn't get rid of. He seems to have informed them how to play football again, and that's what they're doing. So they're if you're a betting man, they're a good one to go with at the moment.
They're the hot hand, yeah. And what else has been going on? I mean, I've maybe caught the scores over the past couple weeks, but haven't really kind of. Have there been any other trend lines that are poking their head out?
To be honest, it's got a bit predictable, the Premier League. They're like, Chelsea are like head and shoulders better than everybody else. Like, they really are, like, quite a long way. Yeah. Not that their quality of players are that much better than United or City or Arsenal even, but they just have got the whole team thing really down to a fine art. And I can't see, even now, which is a long, long way to go, it's really well within their hands. And if they lose it, their only challenge seems to come from the Manchester teams. City, who are falling to bits, and Manchester United, who, though they've bought like a brand new team, they haven't really like quite. They will be good, but not now. And
they have nobody. I think who Blackett is their most experienced defender coming into this next game.
They've got a couple of Rojos out. They have what's the other fella's name? Anyway, Evans is still out. Yeah,
Chris Smalling.
Smalling is suspended for. And so, yeah, they've got basically no defenders, which doesn't help a lot if you're playing very highly competitive football. Other than that, the British teams, it's funny, Liverpool have gone back to being rubbish again, which is at a very base level just very amusing, because they had these grand, it was like, oh, Liverpool are back, like, this is going to happen again. And of late, there's been Champions League's been happening, so it's kind of a bit of a disjointed schedule, but the British teams, apart from Chelsea, haven't really been acquitting themselves particularly well abroad. I watched Liverpool take on Real Madrid, and it was just embarrassing. They were just so much worse.
What was the final?
3-0.
They lost 3-0 in Madrid as well, right?
They lost 3-0 at home, and then they lost 1-0 in Madrid.
Okay.
Though they should have lost. I watched that as well. It was more Madrid's profligacy in front of goal that really cost them.
That's a dime word or a never mind. What about City lost to CSK Moscow last night as well, or a couple of
days? Yep, they lost to CSK, which is also good because nobody likes it. They lost away in Moscow in one of those games. All the Russian away games seem to be plagued by, if you have any black players on your team, there's just like a never-ending like diatribe of racism, and which
bananas being thrown in the pit.
Bananas being thrown, and they outlaw fans and stuff. But even so, it seems to affect people like Yaya Toure a lot. I've never quite figured out why I would have, if I was being racially abused at a football match. Like I would hope I'd play really well, actually, and it would bring out the best in me. But they lost away. No, they drew away, and they lost at home, which is pretty bad. Which means they probably won't qualify, which is good because
not good for Spurs, because that means they'll probably be in the Europa League, right?
Yeah. Though Spurs are doing very well in Europe at the moment. I don't know if you're following it.
First ever win in Greece last night.
Yep, they won 2-1 against a team I've never heard of, but no one really knows anyone in Greece. I've no idea where it is in Greece, but they're doing pretty well, Tottenham, in the old Europa League. They're just not doing that well in the Premier League, but they won at the weekend, so you never know.
Yeah.
Like, the corner's always about to be turned with Tottenham.
They're only three points back of Arsenal and a few points off fourth place. I mean, the league at this point is, as a whole, from what I've seen, this is what I know, like, or what I've convinced myself following it very little over the past couple of weeks, is that the league is still wide open. Fourth place is still wide open.
Oh, no, I agree completely, yeah. I mean, I think Chelsea will win it and Burnley will go down, but the rest is pretty fluid, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Bookends. We have the bookend set, but then other than that,
yeah, absolutely. But you know, it's up for grabs, and there's some pretty good teams. But yeah, I mean, I hope Tottenham can really pull out the bag. It doesn't help playing in Europe every second week in random parts of the Balkans. But yeah. It's strange. I would say Tottenham probably actually have the best team in that competition, like if they wanted to win the Europa League, which is quite a big thing to win.
Yeah, but until the Champions League teams come down.
There's going to be a few of the sort of third place Champions League teams that will drop into it.
Ajax, right? Probably.
The big teams of like the smaller nations seem to make up those kind of ones. But still, Tottenham got a good team, and you know, I would put a shift in on the old British teams. Always quite good at the Europa League for some reason. We always seem to get
Remember that Fulham run a few years ago?
Fulham.
The comics of Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, they were in a major final against Atletico Madrid. So, yeah, Fulham, Middlesbrough, Celtic, Rangers.
Speaking of Scotland, what's going on with Scottish football? You said Hearts is top of the league, but that's top of the...
The second division. The top division is a hilarious joke of barely professional football. It's not very interesting to watch. I don't really actually follow it. I only really follow Hearts. I know Celtic aren't top, but they will be soon, and that'll be the end of it. Strangely enough, though, the national team is actually doing pretty well at the moment, which is good. We have European qualifiers. You guys probably have that other thing that I don't know. CONCACAF, that's the one at the moment. And Scotland actually the best team they've had in a long time, mainly because they all play in England, I think.
They're in the like the worst group, right?
They have terrible group. Yeah. It's Poland, Ireland, Germany, Georgia, Gibraltar.
Okay, so
we're currently third, joint third with the Germans, 4 points. Top is seven with Ireland and Poland joint, so, and we're playing the Irish next. So it's a pretty massive game. That's next week, at home. So that's a real must win.
Like, and then we're next week?
The Irish.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So nice, tasty little local derby. And then we're actually playing England in a friendly the couple of days after that, which again, usually it's strange timing, but that's happening. But yeah, it's a good team. It's a shame we got such a grim group and like, oh, to be English and have San Marino and Estonia and stuff. You can go crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that that probably wraps it up for the day, for the week. Next week, I will be will be truly international. I'll be broadcasting from the Netherlands. I'll be in the Netherlands for the next several weeks.
Amsterdam.
Hopefully, we'll be able to get Ben back on. Yeah, I think that's it. Follow Louis at Deep Fried Fiddle.
Follow on the Twitter feed.
On the Twitter. Follow me at RLM Kane. Follow the Volterra at the Volterra. And we should have some new posts up and maybe a fun little announcement about Louis's new project. So that's
keep
it.
Tabs.
What?
Keep tabs on it, guys.
Yeah. All right. See you later, Louis. Have a good one.
Take care, Ron. I'll catch you in a bit.
Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey, I didn't know that I'd be missing your soul.